everybody wants to chase those huge returns, okay? And business owners especially, I know because I'm one of them. I'm an entrepreneur just like you. And the bottom line is when we have a few hundred grand sitting in the bank and we see this thing and it's like guaranteed 30% returns, you know, in 6 months, right? Or 100% returns or whatever. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. You better do your due diligence. You better do your homework.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
What's up, real business owners? Welcome back to another episode of the Real Business Owners Podcast. Today, you have just me, Kilo G, you know, whatever you want to call me, right? Kale Goodman. That's always a classic. But anyways, guys, I actually already recorded this episode, but I told the team, I pulled them aside, I'm like, hey, let's actually reshoot this. I want to actually map some things out on the whiteboard. So it's a glass one with kind of a weird background. So some of you guys, you know, if you decide to go watch on YouTube, might not be able to see it super well, but I'm going to walk you through some things today. And the reason I want to walk you through these things is because there's two conversations I had recently that sparked me wanting to share some things with you guys. First of all, I'm driving my daughter to school not too long ago, and we're talking about, you know, money, because she's like, she wants to be influential. She wants to be rich. She wants to have, you know, she wants to have money. She wants to have nice things. And so I told her, I said, you know, I always wanted the same things. I was very driven just like you. And, you know, I got a lot of advice from elderly people. And one of the biggest things that always stuck with me was like, you know, the sooner you start investing, you know, the better off you're gonna be and the quicker you're gonna be where you wanna be. And to me, because I was such a money hungry little kid, I mean, that just meant investing money, right? Like, what can I invest into to get money coming in, you know, from my money, get my money working for me? I've always understood that concept since I was just literally a little kid. Was like, man, what can I invest into? I liked hustling, I liked working, but I liked investing. And so I told her, I said, you know, that was impactful for me, but what I didn't understand is how much you can invest into yourself, right? How much you can invest into areas of your life that matter. And so I gave her some examples, right? Like investing into yourself, like investing into your knowledge so that you can develop more knowledge and that turns into skills that can give you more ability to make more money, right? And the more money that you make, the more money you can invest as long as you're wise, as long as you're smart with it. And so I said, baby girl, right now, while you're so young, like, just know that it's not all about just getting money and investing money. It's about right now you need to be focused on getting the knowledge and investing into yourself. And it got me thinking after that conversation was, you know what, we invest to always attain a gain of some sort, right? It doesn't matter what it is. If we invest time into ourselves to gain knowledge, it's for a reason. It's to gain knowledge, but it's also to gain that knowledge for a reason to gain in other areas of your life. If we invest emotions, it's to receive certain emotions back to us, right? If we invest into other people, the bottom line is we're investing into those other people to attain something, right? Like, even if you're a giver by soul, like you are just a giver, like you're giving and investing into those other people, it might be to attain a gain of some sort of emotion because it serves you. It gives you purpose to give, right? Or it might be to develop a certain relationship that's gonna feed you monetarily, right? So we're always, no matter what we're doing, we're investing. We have self-interest in everything that we invest into, you know? But there's another conversation I had not too long ago, just this last Easter with my wife's grandpa. And I'm gonna share that lesson with you guys at the end of this here in like 20 minutes. Because I think, man, that just really changed my perception on some things. And I wanna share that lesson with you guys at the end. So stick this through to the end. But today I do wanna talk to you guys about, I wanna talk to you about investing money, right? Why? Because all the things I just talked about with my daughter that we invest into, we are using our greatest asset, our greatest resource, which is time. And in order to have more time, we do live in a system of capitalism and currency. And, you know, bottom line is in order to play the game, you know, you've got to play the game at some level in order for you to have to level up to the game that you want to be at, right? As far as getting time freedom back. In order to receive and attain time freedom eventually, We need to not be owned by the very thing that controls us, which is money itself, right? So in order to create money freedom, obviously we've got to get our money working for us. And since I've been asked a few times since our Real Business Owners podcast launched and since our mastermind launched, like, what are your strategies on investing? I want to break down some of my strategies on investing with you guys today monetarily, because money is a tool. Okay, that is a tool for us to get exactly what it is that we want. Everybody is doing this. Everybody's playing this game for one thing only, and it is freedom. We want our time to be dictated by us, not controlled by anything else like money. Like, if you want to go take your family to a $400,000 vacation for a month somewhere overseas, like, you don't want to not be able to do that because money controls you. You've got to have the ability in order to do that. If you want to completely be done working and focus on philanthropy, like, bottom line is you can't be controlled by money in order to do that, right? So whatever your goals are, we are in this game of capitalism, and we need to get that capitalism working for us instead of against us. And so since I understood at a very young age, like, that I wanted to invest, one of the very first investments that I made was a mutual fund. Right? I had an old boss of mine say, you know, if you put $200 a month right now, okay, I was like 18 years old or 19, one of my first jobs. You know, if you put $200 a month into a mutual fund, well, you know, that mutual fund could be, it'll be easily worth $1 million, $2 million by the time you're my age. And this guy's like 40 something at the time, right? So I'm starting to do the math. I'm like, okay, how's that work? He explained compound interest to me a little bit. I was like, okay, no, that's powerful. That makes sense. And so one of the very first investments I did was a mutual fund, right? But I did that when I was just an employee. And instead of $200, because I'm a little bit greedy, guys, like, I want a lot of money, right? So I did $500 a month. I'm doing the math in my head back then. I'm like, oh, if I do $500 a month, you know, that, heck, then that could be worth $5 million when I'm his age, right? So that was powerful to me. And that was one of the first investments I made. But once I became a business owner, the bottom line is I had to get to a certain point before I could start investing again. And that's kind of what this little diagram is that I drew up for you guys. You know, here's me, right? And so I didn't have any money to invest outside of that mutual fund. I just didn't. And so I had to get my business to a certain point in order for me to be able to do that. So what was the investment that I made, the monetary investment that I made while I was building my business, was I was investing back into my business constantly. Okay, so right here, it's got like three arrows going to my business, because majority of the money that I could be taking as a business owner, I wasn't taking. I was taking very little. There's only one arrow going over here to my household, and that's because I literally just lived below my means, what I needed so that I could feed my business more. Because what I needed to do is I needed to build a strong basis. Okay, when I first partnered with Jeremy, our very first partner, I remember he came to me and he was like, hey man, why do you think so many of these businesses that we're starting go out of business? Because they did. A lot of them, 2, 3, 4, 5 years into it, it's like all of a sudden they're out of business. And I was like, you know, man, I think it's just straight up lifestyle. People don't ever keep reserves. They live their life, they live even their business income based, they build their lifestyle around that income. And so when they hit hard times and they can't cover payroll, obviously they lose employees, they can't pay certain things, they don't plan for hard times, and so they can't sustain those hard times and they go out of business. So I'm like, I think we should build a really strong reserve, right? But really what you're building is a basis in your business, okay? And as you level up, you get more employees, you get more overhead, you've got to raise that basis. So we made investments back into our business, and we still do to this day. Back then, the number was like 100 grand. Hey, we're not going to give ourselves a raise until we get to $100,000 in the bank account, net after taxes. And based on the numbers, because we were doing like $20,000 a week in sales at this point, based on these numbers, we'll be there in no time, right? After payroll and stuff, it only take like a few months. Wrong. You know, bottom line is we hit these certain hardships in business. Like, we had our merchant account frozen because we had a customer complaint through the merchant account, and then we had to go through all these things, and they tied up our money for 6 months. And in the meantime, we had to go get a whole nother merchant account. And so you don't plan for those things. That's just one of those unforeseen things that you don't plan for. And so now that reinforced in us that, like, oh my gosh, this basis that we're building, this reserve that we're building, is more important than we thought. So before we gave ourselves a raise personally, okay, we just live below our means, we constantly fed the business reserves to get to that certain point. Okay, now we have to have multi seven figures in our reserve, because if we hit hard times in business, money got frozen, we had to shift, a pandemic happens, whatever it is, we need to be able to sustain and take care of all the people in our organization, including ourselves and our families, and weather that storm for at least 6 months until we can Obviously, build reserves back up again. That's what reserves are for. But it needs to be after taxes, after expenses, everything. So we invested heavily back into our business for a long period of time. Nice thing about that, and you've heard Trevor say this a lot in our podcast, if you've listened to all of them, is like money finds opportunity, opportunity finds money. And so that's like one of the ways that we've been able to invest into a lot of things as partners to strengthen our business as well, is because we always had that capital, whether it was like a big name that we needed to invest to become a sponsorship, like once in a lifetime opportunity. Sometimes those cost six figures in order to just sponsor this one community or whatever that could turn into a huge lead magnet for us, or that's just one example, but there's a lot of things, right? So we built that basis up. That was our biggest investment that we made for several years. Okay, now you're able to start giving yourself raises, right? You get to a certain point in business and you start using that, you start, now that you have that basis, you start building your reserves over on your household side over here. And you build up 6 months of reserves and all that great stuff. And you figure out your bills and your all that stuff. And you stockpile cash over there. But now you got to start doing something with it. Because we've all heard the saying that like your money's not doing any good sitting in a bank for you. It's hardly anything that you're getting on return as far as money sitting in a savings account. And so in fact, right now, because of inflation and everything, it's worth less just sitting in a bank account. So you need to have that money working for you. And so now we get to that point. We get to that point where we want to start investing and getting our money working for us within our personal like portfolio, okay? And that's what I'm going to map out for you guys, what I have right now, okay? And obviously, investments are ever evolving. So, right, this is going to change. This is just what I've had right now, and this is my strategy right now. But I have a long-term vision. I have a long-term strategy this is going to evolve, right? But I want to talk to you guys about it, not to talk about me necessarily, but I want to make some points about how important it is to have these buckets working for you so that you can build your ultimate freedom as well. Okay, so right, first of all, we got to go off net dollars, right? But when I first started, I told you my very first investment was these mutual funds. Okay, now that's just something that I'd pay $500 a month into, but I don't want to keep investing in mutual funds. I want to diversify into multiple things. But this is the long-term low-risk bucket right here. So I have my mutual funds in there. I have whole life insurance plans in there. Okay, now you'll hear a lot of great things about whole life insurance plans. You'll hear a lot of very negative things about whole life insurance plans. What are the negatives? Well, there's high commissions up front. Okay, and another negative is like whole life insurance salesmen sometimes can be super pesky and they always want you to raise it, right? But you want to be diversified. You don't want all your eggs in this big whole life bucket. Now, I love whole life investments. Why? Because you guys, whole life is such a great tax deferred, not deferred actually, scratch that. Whole life is such a great retirement bucket for you to draw from without having to pay taxes on the gains of what you gain in that whole life plan. So typically like 7-8% a year can turn into a very powerful thing with compound interest over the years. Most whole life plans, a decent one's gonna get you 7-8% returns a year on your business. But how they work is it's a life insurance plan. And that life insurance plan is you're paying the death benefit, right? So if you died right now, you would have a coverage that would go to your family. Okay, let's say it's $1 million coverage, but you're paying $2,000 a month, which is what I pay into my whole life insurance plan. Well, that $2,000 a month is going into an account where the whole life insurance company is paying you return on that money. They're out there investing it for you into some of these very safe funds as well. So you're getting 7-8% returns on your money, and there's only a little bit, 50, 60, 70 bucks a month is actually going to that death benefit every month. Now, depending on the whole life plan that you get into, yeah, it can get very nasty. Like some of these whole life plans, they start eating themselves when you do get into later years, right? To where, because your death benefit goes up. Because as you get older, your chance of dying gets greater. And so they start charging you more for the death premium, and then it starts eating itself as far as the equity of it. So we want to stay away from those type of whole life plans, but we want whole life plans where we can level the premium, and then we're going to build cash value in that plan. Now, the reason this is so beneficial is because at the end of your working years, and you want to start drawing from it, whether you've paid into it for 20, 25 years, whatever it is, you can start drawing from it in the form of a loan, right? So it's not taxable. And if you did die within that process, your family's going to get paid this huge death benefit as a return of premiums, which is not taxable either, right? So it's a nice tax-free bucket. You're paying into it with post-tax dollars, and then you're drawing from it later on as a loan, so you're not paying any tax on the gains. The nice thing about that is if you had like to draw from Social Security and some of these things to get by in your later years, that income that you draw from that is not going to affect you getting into a taxable tax bracket, which then they're gonna come and tax your Social Security benefits, right? We see that with a lot of elderly people in the baby boomer years right now, where they're literally going down to banks and they're like, man, where's my money all going? They're outliving their money because their Social Security is getting taxed because of the money that they're drawing from their 401ks and their IRAs that is taxable. And so it's a sad thing to see, right? So we want those buckets in there that we're literally gonna be able to draw from tax-free. And that's why I like whole life insurance plans. Tips on getting a good one is make sure you get a good agent that's looking out for your best interest. They're not gonna put you in a standard whole life plan that's gonna eat itself later on. It's in a plan that's gonna be safe, has certain guarantees that if the market ever does go bad, maybe like an IUL, which is an index universal life policy. They come with living benefits. So if you can't take care of yourself, but you're not dead, you can still draw from those life insurance policies, even though you're still alive, right? Even though there's not a ton of cash value in them. But you can also level the premiums. So even when you did get age 50, 60, they don't eat themselves. So make sure you get like a really good whole life agent that's gonna look out for your best interest. Little hack, something I did, is I actually went down and I got my own life insurance license because it's a super easy test. I studied for like a week or two, went down to the state, took the test. Now when I have these whole life guys hit me up, if I do wanna up my premium, I say, sure man, I'll let you write a policy on me, but I need you to pay me the commission back and you can keep a little bit for your time. Or I can just write the policy myself, right? Because those policies are pretty good, right? They're usually a 12 to 15 month commission. So you're literally paying into them for a year or two before you actually start building your equity in your own whole life plan. But that doesn't make it necessarily a bad thing. Long term, like you want that those safe buckets filled up for when you do get your later years. Because if your business goes to shit, if your long term or your higher risk investments go to shit, it's nice to know that you're gonna be taken care of with these safe buckets, right? There are other things too that you can invest into as a business owner. And if you go back to the beginning of our podcast and you talk to somebody like, or you listen to our episode like from Danny Blue, like we talk about solo 401ks. Danny set me up a solo 401k. You can defer up to $55,000 a year into these solo 401ks, okay? Which means you're taking that money off of the books right now, putting it over here. Then you can self-direct it into all these other different investments, like maybe your stock portfolio or maybe some of your real estate holdings or things like that, in order for you to give control of your money to invest it. But now you're deferring a lot of taxes right now. Later on, when you hit age 72 and a half, there is what they call, required minimum distributions. So they're gonna make you start pulling some of it out at a minimum rate so that it just doesn't sit there forever if you do die, right? They may start pulling some of it out, and then if there is some left, then you obviously pass it on to your beneficiaries. But there is required minimum distributions, which will be taxable way later in life. And so you gotta factor like how much you wanna put into a bucket like that. But that gives you a lot of power to save money on taxes right now. But these are all your safe buckets. Those are my safe buckets. I pay a couple $1,000 a month into this whole life plan. I still pay, $500 a month into these mutual funds. I have my solo 401k set up that I put over a couple $1,000 a month into. But you guys, here's the thing. I'm to the point where I can do that now, but I look at this as part of my personal overhead now. What I mean by that is I treat it like a bill, okay? So just like a cell phone bill, like I need a cell phone bill to continue to operate my business, right? I need Wi-Fi at the house. I need utilities at the house. Could I live without those things? Yeah. Do I want to? No, but so I pay that bill every month because those are things that I like and I want to and operate my life. And so just like that, I treat these like a bill. So that's your like first net, but my net, right, is after these expenses, which I treat like a bill, now I have X amount of dollars left over every month that I want to invest, okay? And I might look at these quarterly, I might look at these monthly, but this is where I start investing into some of my legacy things, right? Like my long-term real estate holdings, or just my long-term holdings, okay? I like real estate, okay? It's no secret that real estate's created more millionaires in our country than any other industry over the last 50, 60 years. Okay, so yeah, there's all these crypto things and millionaires and billionaires coming out, and that's great. I don't have anything against crypto, but I'm not like a huge fan of going all in on crypto either. Why? Because you guys, we live in a system of currency and capitalism. No matter what it is, there's still the same game is going to be played, right? If you're great at trading crypto, great, good for you. But the bottom line is that they're already figuring out how to tax it. So as you're converting it back to the dollar, okay, or you're utilizing it and using it to buy things, even with your Bitcoin, Coinbase, and all the big platforms, they're still sending you tax statements. You still got to pay tax on it. What are they taxing it on? They're taxing it based on the dollar value. Okay, so even if the dollar went to shit completely and we all adopt crypto one day, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon, but when it does or if it does, they're still going to tax it. We're still going to be playing the same game. We live in a system of currency. We don't live in the bartering and trading days, you know? So because of that, we're always going to play this game. So why do I like real estate? Because if I own real estate, if I own hardcore businesses, commercial buildings, single family homes, if I own, you know, multifamily holdings, if I own land and people want to utilize those, they want to pay me for those things, whether it's land that a business wants to put his business on, whether it's multifamily that someone's got to pay me rent every single month, whether it's my real estate holdings, okay, my personal ones that I'm going to do like an Airbnb or vacation rental on, which are the best returns in real estate right now. Okay, well, bottom line is whether it's in cash or whether it's the dollar cash or whether it's in crypto, people are still going to have to pay me in whatever currency we're using to utilize these assets. Okay, and in our tax code currently, I love these investments because not only do we get a little bit better return on them than some of these safe things we first talked about, but the bottom line is we get tax benefits, long-term tax benefits from these holdings, most of them, not a whole lot from the land, but things like multifamily or real estate or your Airbnbs or vacation rentals, like we get to take depreciations against the income that property generates, right? And I'm not going to go into it today because we'd be on this podcast for well over an hour explaining the whole tax structures and how to flow your money, and I definitely need to do an updated one on that. But the bottom line is when we pass this income through to you, we're not taxed at earned income rates. We're taxed at passive income rates. Passive income rates. And so the bottom line is we take depreciations against that income, which keeps us in a much, much lower tax bracket. That's why when we see the wealthy, the guys that are at the ultra wealthy, it's like the reason they're able to keep majority of their money, they're only paying 2%, 3%, and 4% in taxes, even though they're making millions and billions of dollars, like a Donald Trump, like a Jeff Bezos, like a Warren Buffett, is because they're using depreciations to their advantage, right? And that could be cost segregations, it could be bonus depreciations, but the bottom line is all this money that we're generating, we can now depreciate that asset against the income that it's generating, and now we're keeping more of the bottom line money. The catch is, you guys, is that when we liquidate that property, the IRS does have language in there that requires us to buy that depreciation back. Okay, what I mean by buy that depreciation back is it's called a depreciation recapture. So if we have a rental property for, you know, 15 years and, you know, we've had all this equity get built up in it with, you know, appreciation, plus we've generated this income from it forever. Well, what happens is the IRS comes in, they say, all right, it's time for you to pay the depreciations back plus the capital gains. And so you're like, oh my gosh, you start doing the math on it and you're like, man, I've been taking depreciation on this property for 15 years. I'm trying to liquidate 400 grand. They want 180 of it or almost half of it. So it's almost like active income rates, right? So we don't want to just liquidate properties. That's why when the wealthy get wealthy, it's because when they buy these long-term holdings, you guys, it's with the intent to keep it forever. The only way that they would liquidate a property is if they're going to roll it into another property, use a 1031 exchange, which says, I'm going to put this money into this better investment opportunity over here, and it's going to get me better returns on it, and it's going to get me better depreciations on it, right? So that's what they do. They don't ever just liquidate a property if they're really smart and they know what they're doing. They use a 1031 to roll that money to diversify into multiple assets or into a better asset. Okay, so how do you ever get your money or your appreciation out of these properties? Well, a lot of times they don't. If you're like me and you're like a lot of these people at much higher level than me, like I'm looking at them as my mentors, right? Like, oh, that makes sense. I want to leave a legacy to my family. I want to be able to insulate my family from all these, you know, things that are happening right now. Like, look at inflation. Like, our kids, especially my younger ones, they're not going to be able to buy a home very easily, right? Like, it's going to be super hard on them. A starter home is going to be in the millions of dollars someday, you know, and that's sometimes what you think that these big hedge funds and these, you know, political, you know, leaders in the world and in the country, that's what they want, right? They want to wipe out the middle class as much as they can. That's our children. That's our children's children, right? So how do we insulate from them? We build wealth. We hold assets. We don't go liquidate them. But what if you hit hard times where you do need to pull some money out of that? Okay, well, take a loan against it. There's no taxes on loans, okay? So even if you 1031 the money, you diversified into all these other assets, and one of your assets has some great equity in it, and you're like, man, I really need, you know, $100,000 to cover my little girl's wedding coming up, or her college graduation, or, you know, maybe you're just like, I want to help them get into their first home, and it's going to require a down payment. Okay, we'll take out a loan against one of your assets, and it's still going to generate a positive cash flow if you've done your math right. Right? So that's what I like about these long-term holdings is like, I'm building a legacy. I can build $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 a month in positive cash flows and still pay hardly any taxes on that because of the depreciations, the cost segregations, right? And so we can always talk about that stuff in more detail in another podcast, or, you know, if you ever want to reach out to us and understand some real estate strategies, okay? But the other bucket, you guys, is the high risk. Now, obviously you would use a lower portion of your money to get into some of these higher risk ventures, right? And we have several of them. We've gotten into three tech raises, startup companies, which are like Series A rounds of funding, cool products that we believe in. Like, we invest into our buddy Travis Chappell's Guestio app. You know, shout out to Travis. Like, that's cool. It's something he's passionate about. So when you meet like an investor or a business owner that's taking on investors, and they're very passionate about their project, and you believe in them as the jockey, you know, as the jockey of that business, like, yeah, you want to invest into that person. Is it a long shot? Yeah, on paper it is, right? So you gotta be kind of like more conservative with this, because the rate of returns when you look at them on paper always look the best, right? Like 100% returns, 200% returns, 500% returns, right? We're invested into our friend Aaron Wagner. We're invested into several of his food brands, right? So the Mexican restaurants, the Hello Sugar, the Ever Bowls, the Dirty Bird Fried Chicken. We're investing into all those things, okay? But we know how passionate he is at it. We've seen the success that he's already developed for himself, you know? So we're investing into a lot of these group funds. Some of these group funds involve real estate, which is great as well, but those are all structured differently, okay? Like, there could be huge management fees off the top. So whether the fund makes money or not, the owners of the fund are still making money, right? So you wanna look out for those things. When you're investing into startups, tech raises, group funds, like Aaron Wagner's, or some of these real estate multifamily holding funds, like the Grant Cardone one or whatever, like, the guys, you gotta understand, like, you gotta look at the paperwork, okay? I've never looked at a Grant Cardone fund or anything like that, but the bottom line is a lot of these funds, some that I have looked at, are 15, 20% management fees, plus they have like enormous accounting fees involved in there as well, which is far more than what an accountant is actually, you know, being paid to manage these funds. And so they're taking all their profit through these, you know, hidden languages in the contract. I don't like funds like that. Those are the things that I stay away from, okay? I wanna only be involved in a fund if it's something I believe in, if it's something I see as like a huge return, right? Like, so I'm gonna only take, like, if you actually ever listen to our friend Dan Fleischman, right? He talks about how he's got like his, you know, with his net, he's got his strategy of like, he puts 80% into these low risk stuff, you know, 10% into the medium risk, and only 10% into the high risk, or something like, I can't remember the exact numbers that he does, but he's got a system to it. And that's kind of the whole point of this podcast, is to help you guys understand that, like, you've got to create your system around your money in order to create your freedom, right? So whether that's like, hey, with my net, I'm gonna have my non-essential expenses every single month, like the travel and some of those things, which I invest into. Like, I invest into memories, right? Like, I take my family on vacations. I take my family out to eat. I take my family out to things that I don't have to do. I could be much more frugal if I wanted to and put more money into these buckets, but you've got to figure out what your net is, and then you've got to determine, how much do I want to put in my long-term low-risk stuff, my medium-risk stuff, with the higher returns, or my super home run unicorn funds, in order for me to create that plan for my legacy, right? Like, I might only put 10% into these high-risk funds, right? I throw 100 grand at them here and there. I throw 100 grand at whatever, some of one of WAG's funds or one of our tech raise funds like Guestio that I talked about, or a startup that I want to be involved in. And those are like home runs, right? If one of them works out but two of them don't, I'm still going to come out like super up, right? Or if one of them works out and five of them don't, I'm still going to come out. Those are like just cool, fun things to be a part of. And they can turn out to be huge. They can be 1,000% returns. But the bottom line is you want to create a lower part of your fund to put into that fun stuff that could be a huge home run for you. Obviously, you've heard the stories of people that hit it big by investing into Facebook when it was brand new or whatever, right? So the point on the high risk that I like to make though, you guys, is that you got to control your impulses. They always sound the best. You guys, everybody wants to chase those huge returns, okay? And business owners especially, I know because I'm one of them. I'm an entrepreneur just like you. And the bottom line is when we have a few hundred grand sitting in the bank and we see this thing and it's like guaranteed 30% returns, in 6 months, right? Or 100% returns or whatever. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. You better do your due diligence. You better do your homework. With some of these high-risk funds, I reach out to friends like, hey, help me understand this contract. There's a few things in there I don't understand. Could be Jim, our attorney. Could be a friend like Aaron. Could be a friend like Jeff or Tony or someone that's in that investment world that understands this language more than I do. And then when they find those hidden funds, then I can make a decision. When they find those hidden fees in the funds, I can make a decision whether it's like, I'm not gonna get into a fund like that. I wanna get into funds that are performance-based, meaning there's always gonna be some sort of management fee, right? But do you wanna be in a fund that's taking 2 or 3% management just to break even, but they make their gains when the project actually comes to fruition and everybody wins? Or do you wanna be in a fund that's gonna make a shit ton of money off of you whether the project works out long-term or not? Okay, now obviously, people don't go into these things usually. There is some, right? But people usually don't go into these projects with like, I want the business to fail. No, they usually go into it with a goal in mind of like, I want to get it to a certain point, make it worth a certain amount of money, sell it off to another fund, or you know, make sure all the investors win. But when they sneak all those fees in there, they're trying to cover their ass, right? And so you want to cover your assets by doing your homework and doing your due diligence. Okay, so anyway, that's what I recommend on these high-risk funds. So there's pros and cons to all of them, but I want to be diversified, you guys. Me and my partners have some investments on these things together. I've got some of them on my own. I've got a ton of my own personal real estate holdings. I got some land deals. I put some money in the multifamily funds. I put some money into my own real estates. I've started buying vacation rentals, but if you do buy a vacation rental, you always want to buy a vacation rental. The returns are sick, especially when you've got 70, 80, 90% occupancy rates on this property in a prime location. But if that market goes to crap for some reason, or the market falls out on travel completely, like maybe another pandemic or a 9/11, like you want to make sure you can put a renter in there to still get you a positive cash flow of something, right? So that's the kind of math you want to do when you're looking at like buying a single family home as a Airbnb or whatever, right? So anyway, that's the deal. But here's the point, is you guys have to budget in order to make this work, okay? I fall off my budget sometimes too, you guys. And I was actually talking to the partners the other day about creating our own little software specifically for business owners that will give them a snapshot of their true net every month or quarter, right? And because we don't really have that, like there is Mint and there is like Truebill and some of these great like budgeting softwares that link up with your bank accounts and they give you these snapshots. But man, what if we had one that was like our true net, right? Like tax liabilities, and it showed you a list of your non-essential expenses so that you can see like what cuts you could make there in order to invest more. And it gives you that number every month of like, this is what you can invest based on your numbers last month. Because in business owners, it's hard to actually have a solid budget because our income fluctuates, our revenues fluctuate, we go through peaks and valleys, but still, you've gotta have some sort of budget or structure to how you're gonna invest your money. And in order to have that, you've gotta have some sort of budgeting habits in order to really know if you're investing. If you're not having some sort of budget, then you're doing what most entrepreneurs do and you're just throwing money at things and you're just hoping for the best, okay? And that's not a great strategy. Hope is never a great strategy when it comes to investing your money, and no one's ever gonna care about your money more than you. So you've gotta do the work in order for you to create the habits to actually know what your money's doing so you can create your structure to build your legacy. And the reason I felt like this was such an important conversation is because just this Easter, and this is the lesson I wanted to share with you guys at the end, I was talking to my wife's grandpa. He's 80 years old, you guys. He's 80. And he said something to me, and I was like, shit, damn, that's true. Like, I've thought about that, but I haven't really thought about it like that. And what he said was, you know, and he only told me, first of all, he only told me this because he sees that I'm like him in some sort of way, right? Like, I like to acquire assets. Like, you gotta understand, this is a cattle rancher who's bought ranches all over the country, like Colorado, Utah, all over, right? So he has all this massive like land wealth, and he has some money wealth as well, and wealth in his cattle and all these things, right? And he said, acquiring this has actually been the fun part. And if I think about it, it's been the easy part, because what I'm going through right now, trying to figure out how to give it all away, that's the hard part. Why? Because the guy's 80. He can't work like he used to. And that's what that man has done his whole life. Like, I drive by the fields that he owns, and he's still out there with a shovel at 80 years old, even though he's had hip surgeries and all this stuff, right? But the thing is he now realizes from seeing the family maybe feud about some things, and they're a great family. They don't feud about a lot, but like there's disagreements on things, and you know, instead of enjoying their later years, instead of enjoying like their money, they're like worried about how can we pass this on to our kids without being overly taxed, or how can we pass it on to them and be fair, and how can we do all these things, right? And so when he said that to me, he said, you know, it's actually easy to make it, and it's fun to acquire all of this, these assets and all this stuff. But man, giving it away is so much harder. And I was like, man, that's so true. And I know that to a certain point, because I've got a trust. I've got some language in there to protect my kids if there's ever an incident, right? To where people can't sue them and try and take that some of that money that I leave on to them. And you know, I've got some of those things, and I've got that layer of protection in there by having a trust and a will and all that stuff built in there. But I started thinking after he told me that, I'm like, you know what? A trust and a estate plan is something that you need to update as your business gets legs and it gets growing and you start investing back into it and building your bases and then building your personal reserves, and then you start investing it and you start getting your money, making money for you to build your legacy, to build your freedom of time. You've got to update that every 5 to 10 years. Everybody's heard the saying, you can't take it with you. That's true. You don't go to your grave with a U-Haul behind you. That's true. But at the end of the day, you guys, like, you better plan to give it all away. And how do you want that to look? Some people want to give a big chunk of it to charity like Warren Buffett and only give a certain amount to each one of their kids to insulate them from what's been going on in this country, in this world, right? In this system of capitalism. Okay? So you got to plan to give it away. I recommend you update your estate plan, your trust, your wills every 5 to 10 years at a minimum. Because we don't know when that time's gonna come. We don't know how much time we have on this earth. And that's what most entrepreneurs screw up, is we always think we have enough time, right? Like, we're just keep thinking about this long-term vision, but we don't create these little plans along the way to truly insulate our families and take care of the loved ones, which is why we do it. That's why we do what we do, is to insulate them, to help them, to give them something that they can start with greater than what you had and go build something even greater and all of that stuff, right? Like, we all want our name to actually mean something. And that's been my long-term vision, man. I picture a big family ranch where the family all has their own little estates on it. And even my kids, man, they don't know me, but they know Grandpa Goodman was the one that helped build this. I read Grandpa Goodman's book. I read, you know, multiple books. I followed his outline, right? Like, he's the reason we're able to do all of this. He's the reason we have the name that we have in the community. Like, I used to think that was like a unique goal or like vision, right? Like, oh, this is what I want. But as I've gotten to know more and more entrepreneurs doing bigger things, higher levels of success, that's what we all want. We all want the land. We all want the big estates. We all want the legacy. We all want the name to mean something. And if you do, it's gonna start with you having a budget and creating those financial habits. You can't just make more money to solve problems. You've gotta develop those financial habits. And then you've gotta take and tap into that courage, that willingness to actually go out there and invest it into the high-risk stuff and be smart about it. Invest it into the long-term holdings that you're not gonna get taxed to death. Invest it into the low-risk stuff that's always, you know, gonna be there. That compound interest that doesn't look like much right now, but in 20, 25 years, it does. I'm so grateful that I started with some of these things as young as I did. Started investing when I was 18 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. I just know I want greater. But now, as I as I get better in business and I get better in my budgets and my financial habits, I can actually look at a picture that I created and say, okay, I know I can go invest $250,000 into this right now and not worry about it. Okay. I know I can go invest into two or three, you know, real estate holdings. I know that I can give my friend $100,000 for a startup on a Series A round of funding, you know, but do your homework, do your due diligence, do your budgeting, and then make sure that you plan to give it all away the right way. Cause there is ways to do it. There's ways to avoid the probate. There's ways to avoid your family fighting over it later on. Like, you want your money to actually help. You want it to do something great. You don't want it to be something that your most cherished people, your family, ends up fighting over. And we've seen that too many times. I've seen that with my own family. Okay, when my grandpa passed away, there was all this fighting over step siblings and all this stuff, right? And it's a mess. It gets jammed up for 2 or 3 years, and then nobody gets paid except for the attorneys. And if they do, it's very little. That's what happened to my dad anyway. So anyways, you guys, that's the episode I wanted to drop on you guys today. That's the big lesson I want to share with you at the end of it, because I don't think about it like that. It's always fun to make it. It's fun to acquire it. It's fun to get the stuff. You know, we all work our asses off for it. We all hustle for it. But we don't know how hard it is to give it away. And that's really what I realized when I talked to my wife's grandpa, was like, you know what? I don't know how hard that is, but I see how hard it is on you right now. And that inspires me to actually take that side of things a little bit more seriously. Okay, I've gotten pretty good at understanding money and how it flows and how it works. And I know I'm on path to build something great for my family, but I haven't been updating my trust. I haven't been up like thinking and about like, man, that is gonna be hard. That is gonna be taxing on me if I just neglect, procrastinate. I've got this saying that impulsiveness and ignorance leads to implosion, okay? And that definitely is true when it comes to your money. When you're looking at these high-risk funds, you can't just get impulsive and throw all your money at it. You gotta make sure these buckets are taken care of before you go into this high-risk one, okay? Everything looks better on paper. And it never seems to work out 100% the way it was supposed to, right? So keep that in mind. Don't get impulsive with your money, and don't stay ignorant with your money. Those two I's literally equal disaster, okay? So anyways, you guys, I hope you got some value out of this. If you wanna go watch it on YouTube, okay, I kinda mapped it out a little bit here. I don't know how visible it is. Our whiteboard, like I said in the beginning, it's black, right? So it doesn't really pop, but I kinda walked people through it so that they understand some of the strategies I do. But ultimately, man, I just want you guys to understand investing is so powerful no matter what it's for, okay? But we're all investing to get our time back and not be controlled by things like money. We don't want money to dictate our time. And so you've got to take action on those things. Money is your tool. But we also want to make sure we plan to give it away the right way. So hopefully you guys got some value out of that. If you did, of course, like it, share it, rate it, review it, do all that. And anyway, we appreciate all you guys. We love you. We love this RBO community. And if there's anything we can help on, or there's some clarity you want on this episode, just reach out. You know, shoot me a DM. All right, peace out. Love y'all.